Hello?
Blog Talk
Hello?
Radio.
Hello? Hello, we're here again. Today is Monday. It is June the 6th, 2016. I am your host, Vita Miguel. This is the Vita Miguel Show. Please be welcome. Have a seat. Take a seat. Sit on down. Rest your feet. Rest the bones. We're going to get into a person who has meant a lot to me in this life, Mr. Muhammad Ali. For those of you who are joining us on the internet, you can find us at hashtag Vita Miguel Show on Twitter. You can follow the Vita Miguel Show by going to at Vita Miguel Show on Twitter if you like. That's where my Twitter handle. For the discussion of today's show, you can join us right now and go to hashtag Vita Miguel Show. Also, on Facebook, you can join us at the Vita Miguel Show on Facebook. That's the Facebook page for the show. All right. Those who also of you all who may not be aware, you can call us at 323-870-3410. Again, that number is 323-870-3410. You can call in. I'd love to hear from you all. 323-870-3410. All right. This show really is very another show where we're celebrating one of the greats. The very first show that we did was about Prince and his influence. So we have another giant in his own industry, his own field. Muhammad Ali has gone on to be with his ancestors. I am very, very, very shaken up about this because of the fact that there are very few athletes today who embody what Muhammad Ali embodied. If for that alone, that's what's gotten me over the years. I think when I was first introduced to Muhammad Ali seriously, really started researching him, paying attention to him, I know for my audience, a lot of you might be a little bit older, and you're saying, okay, well, that was 2 seconds ago. Where were you? That was in 1996 when I saw him hold the Olympic torch, and he lit the torch for the games in Atlanta and what that meant. And I remember my mother being very, not emotional, but she was, I guess, maybe whimsical about it. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but she felt a certain type of way about him lighting the torch because she and he are the same generation. She grew up seeing a lot of the things that he saw, and it was just a little bit, more of a moment for her because she knew him when he was, you know, very fast, articulate. He always still will be those things, but the Parkinson's unfortunately had taken its toll. So the Muhammad Ali that I knew in 1996 was this, I knew he was a great man, but I saw him struggle with the Parkinson's. And that's what my grandfather struggled with. He struggled with Parkinson's before he passed away. So it was very personal for me to see this man that a lot of people admired. And I remember seeing, you know, President Clinton, he was crying and everything, because he was a hero to so many people for so many different reasons. I guess my whole thing, like I said before, just besides being a fighter, he was so much more than that. He was a great fighter, but he knew he was put on earth to do more than that, and that was to stand up for his people and stand up at a time against injustice when it's never popular to do that. There's no popular time to do that. And he did that with dignity and respect, honor, and a great deal of integrity and bravery that I think a lot of us are lacking today. How many people would be willing to stand on their beliefs and they're not willing not to compromise their beliefs over a choice that demanded that they show and they prove what their faith really is and what is they held to be dear. So it's something to see. I really hope that they have a beautiful service, a homegoing service. I understand there have been 30,000, I think, passes or tickets to attend in Louisville, Kentucky, where Muhammad Ali was born on January 17th, 1942. I really do hope that it's nice. I think that's the thing with Prince. We never got a chance to really mourn him publicly. We never got a chance to mourn him at all. Really, we didn't have that closure of the homegoing service. And that's really important. And Muhammad Ali, just like Prince, is a citizen of the world. So he really does deserve to be able to have that honor and have that respect. I think that one of the most interesting aspects of his life was, of course, his religion. I think it took a lot of bravery, like I said, to stand up and say, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be part of killing people who have done nothing to me. And it's interesting to me that we're sitting here 50 years later and we're still having the same discussion. You know, that's what's so ironic. That's what really gets to me, because you have a lot of athletes who are not willing to stand up or say take a stand at all. And they are way more paid. They're getting exponentially way more money than Muhammad Ali was ever going to see. So even if they stopped now, they could still have a decent life, still help other people in their community and their family. And if they stood up and they said, no, we're not going to take what's going on in our country and what's going on in the world right now. Whatever it is you feel that needs to be fixed, you can take that, you know, the way you want to take it. But for him to stand up at that time, and for the athletes who are not standing up now, it does not look good. It really doesn't look good. So that's something to think about. I think that I really would have liked to have seen he and Malcolm X in their day. And it breaks my heart that the two of them didn't part on the best of terms. From what I understand, they had a kind of a falling out. But that does happen sometimes, even the best of friends. So I understand that it happened. I'm just not thrilled that it happened. I think it's great that Muhammad Ali really saw himself, like you said. He said, you know, even before I knew I was the greatest, I saw myself as the greatest. And, you know, I think he also said, you know, people have a problem because they don't have faith in themselves. So how are you going to think you're going to accomplish anything if you have no faith at all? So, I mean, at least you have to have the faith in yourself first and that you're going to do great things. I really do think that Muhammad Ali has a lasting impact on us for the rest of our lives. There's not going to be another person like him for a very long time. Just like I said with Prince, you're not going to find another musician exactly like Prince for a very long time. I think it's said that besides the Bible, the most books in the world at one point were written, I think are still written about Muhammad Ali, because, again, he everyone could relate to him. You had Asians who appreciated what he did. You had the Muslim community. Now, that's a worldwide community. They appreciated him. You had the African-American community. You had also the European-American community. They, some of them appreciated what he did, I think. I think that some of the other things that, I don't want to say maybe upset. But I think what's ironic is that you have so many people who were saying, oh, he was so great, it was so great, he stood up at a time, it was very hard to do something or not. But some of these same people who I guess have seen everything come and go, you get older, you mellow out. These are the same people who, when he was going through all this in 1968, and they were trying to put him in jail for being a conscientious objector and not wanting to go to Vietnam, these people were saying that he should be fined and he should be stripped of his heavyweight title. He shouldn't be able to make money. And this is going on, I think, for about 5 years. He couldn't fight. Now, you have to understand, and I'm sure most of you do, when you're boxing, that is a lifetime. Like, you're 4 years of your life. This is a very small window of time in which you can do this. He shouldn't have been fighting as late as he did. So they really did put hands on him in a metaphorical sense, in that they tried to shut him down, tried to ruin his reputation, tried to do all these things. And if you're an athlete of that profession, if you're a boxer, like I said, the 4 years is critical, and there's a lot that you have to coordinate. There takes a lot to be a successful boxer. I know I tried boxing for a little while, and I looked at it like, oh, well, you know, you're just hitting somebody, so what? You got to be strong. Yeah, you have to be quick, but there's really not too much more to it. It's just really more about, you know, your physicality, and yes, your physicality is very important, but the boxing strategies that you use in order to defeat your opponent, that's a whole other matter. It's not just you're throwing punches. You're literally thinking on your feet about the best way you can triumph over your opponent, and at the same time, you're fighting fatigue. You're being hit with these horrific blows, and you've got to have the presence of mind to come back and think about what is it you're going to do. So now you're doing this, and then think about this. This is one of the sports where, yes, you have coaches, and like your coach tells you what you do and all this other stuff, but this one is a special sport because you're literally getting, unfortunately, hit in the head. You can be punch drunk. You can lose your fight for a second. You can faint. Anything can happen in that ring if you get hit the wrong way. And you're dealing with all this, and you've got a corner, okay, that you're going to. Someone's in your corner, and they're there, and they're helping you out. But you're going through all this, and while you're being hit in your head by your brain, where your brain is, where you're supposed to be making all these higher decisions. You know, not to demean any other sports or make it seem like one sport is way better than the other, but boxing is that one sport where you are being pummeled in the very area that you need to be able to function. That's just, you don't have that in a lot of other sports. Your body is going through the taxing motions of whatever it is that you're asking it to do, whether it's running, skiing, swimming, tennis, baseball, basketball, football, yeah, but no one is hitting you in your head. So that's something to think about. You have to be a mentally strong person in order to do that. And I found that out when I didn't get in an actual ring, but I was in the gym and I was boxing to lose weight. And it is a heck of a workout. You can't just jump up there and say, okay, I'm going to box now. You know, I was told, because I was trying to lose weight, I was still a little bit too heavy. Not that I was too heavy, but that my weight was slowing me down so that if I wanted to hit my opponent, I was going to have to make sure I hit very hard because I was up against somebody who was lighter than I was of weight that could literally run circles around me. That was going to be a problem. So I had to learn how to hit well and hit hard and hit to knock people out. Now, by the way, I'm not advocating violence. I don't want anybody writing me and telling me, Vita Miguel is advocating knocking people on the floor. No, Vita Miguel's not saying that. What I'm saying is when I was taking boxing lessons, that's when I really understood what it meant to be a boxer. There's a lot that's going on, a lot. One of my favorite movies is When We Were Kings. And I was watching it the other day when MSNBC reran it, and you got to see how brilliant Muhammad Ali was, how awesome he was, how charismatic he was, how generous he was, all these different things. different aspects of his personality came through. And yes, people have their issues with him. No one is perfect. I think that's why he's such a great hero, because you saw a lot of his imperfections as well. He didn't always have the best relationship with women. Some people said he was a little bit too arrogant. Some people didn't like the fact that, you know, he and his dad, they had, I think, had kind of a choppy relationship. I'm not really sure on that, but I'm not claiming to be the biographer on Muhammad Ali's life. But there was a lot that was going on, and people don't think he should have. They were upset because he left. Not that he left, but he stayed with the Nation of Islam when Malcolm left, and all these different things. There are all these different things that people don't agree with. They don't agree about him being a conscientious objector. They see that as being a flaw. They see all these different things that are going on with the man. I think that, I think, like I said, that makes you, to me, a little bit more human. And every hero has to have something that's a little bit a flaw or something that's off, because that's how we relate to them, right? You have Superman, who was a, what was it? He had a kryptonite. You have I think, Monk from the TV show Monk. He was afraid of milk, which was really kind of kooky, McSpooky, but, you know, he had a flaw. You had Indiana Jones, who could do everything, but the man hated snakes. You know, how can you be, you're an archaeologist, you're out digging in the wild, and you can't handle, you with a bullwhip, no less, and you can't be around snakes. Those are some things that made us able to relate to these particular figures. They had something that was off. Now, I'm not saying that if you have too many character flaws and you're morally bankrupt and something is really wrong with you, and you treat everybody in your life horribly, and, you know, you have your, have sociopathic tendencies, that's a good thing. No, I'm not advocating that at all. What I am saying is that you do have to have people in your life that you can relate to, who inspire you, who make you want to do better, who give you the push that you need and to do what it is that you want to do in life. I love certain media images of Muhammad Ali. I think there's one picture of him, and he's standing over an opponent that he has knocked out in the ring. It's very popular. I think I have that up on the slideshow. And I think there was a quote, not his necessarily, but it says, "Impossible is nothing." You know, and one of the things he also says is, "Don't count the days, make the days count." There's so many different things that you can take from this man, and you can take a lot of the good away. And I think that's what we really need to focus on when we're talking about honoring Muhammad Ali. There is so much that you can take away, so many examples of what to do that is right from his life that you can take away and learn and use to grow. All right, so we're on the air. We're talking about the death of the greatest, Muhammad Ali. We are live today, of course, and every time we go on the air. You can join the conversation at hashtag Vida Miguel Show. You can tweet us at Vida Miguel Show on Twitter. Our handle is at Vida Miguel Show. And on Facebook, the Facebook page is The Vida Miguel Show. We'd love to have you. The number here, if you want to call in, is 323-870-3410. Again, that's 323-870-3410. I don't think that there's ever been an athlete that's had such an influence that the people have wanted to see. And if he was everyday okey-doke entertainer / athlete, I don't think it would be the same thing. You know, you do have people who do admire what the athletes do in their prowess in their particular field. But you don't have that much today. You don't have people. So what you don't have today, a lot of, and this is very scarce, is athletes who inspire you in their field and outside of their field. My whole thing is, just to quote someone, so I think that when I'm thinking about entertainers or celebrities, in my mind, if you're someone who I think I would love to have in my home and to sit down and have a nice dinner with, and I'm not talking dinner party where we break out the chargers and the gold flatware and the crystal. I'm just talking about you're going to come over, we're going to have some salad, we're going to have some chicken, we're going to have some potatoes and some string beans and maybe a little bit of cake that I got at the Stop and Shop the other day. That type of dinner. And we're just going to chop it up and we're going to talk with each other. We're going to have real talk. And I think that you're one of those people that I could do that with. I do feel that Muhammad Ali was one of those people. And there's not a lot of those people out here these days. And the irony about that is that now you're more than ever able to connect with these celebrities online, out there in the world. You can see what they're up to, what they want to do, what they don't want to do. You can talk to them. You can give them advice. You know, all these things. You can ask them questions, all these different things, because the Internet has brought these people so close to us. I mean, they're just there. And I don't know. So it kind of freaks me out because I'm like, oh, my goodness, wow. Here's this man who was existing in a world where the media wasn't anywhere near as intrusive as it is. I mean, now if you want to know what Taylor Swift's, what she's going to be using, what kind of ice cube she's going to be putting in her water tonight, you can find that out, whether they're going to be round or square. Because there really is, that wall is really beginning to disappear. So people really do feel like they know people, and that's not always the case. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm thinking about one thing in my head, and it really could be true that if I invited some celebrities over, they could come here and we could have a complete falling out because I thought they were representing one thing, and they really don't represent that, or that's not what they're about. I don't think that Muhammad Ali was one of those people. I think what you saw was what you got, and for him to be that outspoken and that brazen and that brash and that honest with you, that to me is someone who has enough integrity and is comfortable in his own skin, is comfortable in himself, and has that confidence. And a lot of people just don't have that these days because no one ever told them they were going to be great at anything. And that's a whole other tangent. You know, the man, it is said that his mother, Mr. Ali's mother, Odessa Clay, what she said was that, you know, he was a young man and the legend is that his bike was stolen, that he wanted to make sure he was ready to prepare to beat the person who had stolen his bike. I mean, that's a righteous anger, if ever I heard one. I mean, who wants to get their bike stolen at a young age? And the idea was that he wanted to prepare, so he had someone from, I think, the Police Athletic League, an officer who was training young boys at the time to fight. That right there tells you everything you need to know. You know, there are other ways that whole thing, he could have thought about that or handled it. And people are like, well, he's still trying to be violent. Well, let's think about it this way. He really could have gotten some friends, beat this person up. He really could have searched all over the place. We don't know I'm not sure if he ever found this person or not, or if the biker ever showed up. But there are other things that could have happened. But he took it upon himself to learn. Because sometimes you have to have that spark. And there was somebody around him who said, yeah, go ahead and do that because, you know, I can see you doing well with that. So that's what another as inspirational feature I think I've gotten out of Muhammad Ali's life. It's always about who's around you. It's always about who's around you and who surrounds you. I guess it's the same thing, right? So if you haven't taken the time to tell someone who's coming behind you that you want to mentor them, you want to be around them, you want to lift them up, please do that. Be a mentor to people in your life because that is critical. There are so many, I've met so many students who have not tapped into their gifts, who don't know who they are, who don't know why they're here, who will never know. There's a lot of people on this earth walking around like that. And it's not a criticism. It's because no one told them as a kid growing up, listen, you've got this gift, you've got that gift. Everybody's got at least about five or six different gifts. But did someone encourage you in those gifts is the question. So I think that's another important aspect of Muhammad Ali's life. We wouldn't have had Muhammad Ali if someone didn't take the time to mentor him and train him and say, hey, I see something in you, and you're going to do great. You're going to do wonderfully well, and you're not going to, not that wasn't that life was crystal stairs, to borrow from Langston Hughes, but I think that knowing that someone, again, is in your corner, metaphorically, and is always there, and they're trying to back you up, all odds, usually that's your parents, but sometimes you've got to make your own family. And that's another aspect we saw with Cassius, the former Cassius Clay. Excuse me, let me not disrespect the man. With Muhammad Ali, I'm thinking about he was Cassius before he joined the Nation of Islam. It was a second family for him. He had a second set of mentors. It's not that he disrespected his own family, but he had a second set of people who he also came to think upon as family members. And, yes, there are controversies about what was going on at the time in the nation and so on and so forth. But sometimes in this life, you've got to make your own choices about who it is that you're going to call that name. You know, it's not about blood ties so much anymore. We discussed that on a former show. I think that that's another aspect about Muhammad Ali that I will take away from him. And I am very, very, very inspired by his persistence. I think that that's the one word I would have to use if we had to put him into a word, which is not possible, just one. I think I would say persistent. I don't know a lot of people who would go through the levels of stress that he had gone through for years, and just when he could have just stopped it all and said, okay, I'll do what you want me to do. I'll go along with the program. I'll do this. I'll do that. There weren't a lot of people who were going to do that. So the man is and was persistent. He was very persistent. And I think if I had to choose the number one lesson, that would be it from his life. I am, of course, with the rest of you, very heartbroken about what has happened. My prayers and my thoughts go out to the family. I'm so sorry that he left us so soon, because these days, 70-year-old people in their 70s, people do live a lot longer. People are living until 115, 100, almost 120. Some people are 120 in this earth. So it's really something. It's really something to see. I didn't want him to leave. We never want anybody to go. When I heard about him on Twitter, I heard that he had been in the hospital, and the family had been called to his bedside. I didn't want to believe that he was going, because we've already lost so many people this year. And I think that ultimately we've got some big shoes to fill. Creatively, emotionally, spiritually, I think everybody, especially in the United States, they've got to do a check on their soul. There are a lot of soulless people walking around. And I don't mean they can't dance either, or they don't think the right way. There's a lot of soullessness. There's a lot of soullessness. And when you don't have a soul, all right, you know, there's that disconnection with your spirit. And if you don't have that, you don't have anything. Regardless of what you believe, I'm a Christian, but I think for anyone, you've got to have that soul connection. That's what's going to get us through life. So when I say that that's not right, there's nothing else that matters. Hope to see you all next week, or possibly sooner. I'll be talking to you. And we'll see you soon. Thank you.